Good morning, Tony. It's nice to hear you again.
And you, so long ago, we were stood in a rather damp recreation ground in Lye, looking at, well, prize marrows and things.
Well,
and odd-shaped potatoes.
Yeah, well, it opened at 12, didn't it? And
yeah.
That was fine. And then within 2 hours, the heavens had opened.
Yeah. It was a bit, but it was a good day, and everybody was. Everybody was good there, and say a good time was had by all, and slightly
yes.
different to previous year, where of course the weather was absolutely scorching. But
and
that makes
fact,
a difference. I was going to say, but that makes a difference to what we have to do in the garden this year. Last year it was a case of how do you get enough water to your plants and stuff. This year, it's a completely different thing because we've had quite a bit of rain. It's been nowhere near as hot. It makes a difference to what we have to do in the garden, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely. The plants are growing. But, of course, because the plants grow, what else grows? The weeds, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
And really, if you are growing vegetables or even your annuals, make sure you take the weeds out as well, because the difference is that the weeds will actually take the goodness out of the soil. So that's taking all the goodness away from your plants anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
it's an interesting one because I'm guessing that if anybody's garden's like mine, the crop of things that you've got growing is better this year than last year for whatever reason. But things like tomatoes, for instance, so where we got red tomatoes last year, but fewer of them. This year, we've got a really bumper crop of tomatoes that aren't going red at all.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying this, Tony. Mine are not too bad, actually. The large tomatoes in my greenhouse are still green, but the cherry tomatoes are really ripening very, very quickly.
So, yeah, you're lucky.
That's an interesting one. I did go into my greenhouse earlier on today, and I reckon I've had a mouse in there. Because I do. Because I had one big tomato, and it's one called Crimson Crush, which is meant to be blight resistant, which is, as far as I can see so far. And it was bright red. I went to go and pick it, and half of it's been nibbled away.
Oh, a mouse has been having lunch, has it?
I think so. I think it's too big to be a slug. It's not that sort of thing. It's munched.
Well, I had a dog that used to eat the tomatoes. So I mean, he's no longer with us, but he used to love a tomato.
Oh.
And he'd be chomping away on the bush until he saw you. And then all of a sudden there'd be a few chewed up tomatoes on the floor.
Yeah.
Where he dropped them. But yeah, it's an interesting thing. As I say, they don't seem to be ripening. And I know you've said before best thing you can do is pick them, stick them on the windowsill, and stick a banana amongst them.
Absolutely, that's right. Sometimes people say put them in a drawer. I'm not very keen in putting them in a drawer and shutting the light out, because I think the light obviously helps the reddening, if that's the word. But the banana gives off a small amount of gas. And that's the bit that ripens the fruit.
You're going to have to
do that tomorrow now, aren't you? And then try and prove me wrong.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think that's going to be the case. But we will see. I'll report back on that one in next month. Now, I know some of the other things that need to be done. I mean, there's things like pruning summer flowers and shrubs.
Deadhead your roses. Deadhead everything, really. The more that you can take the deadheads off, say on fuchsias or anything like that, then the longer the plant will actually start to flower for you again. Even the ones, and I think we spoke about this at Lye last week, actually, about hardy geraniums.
Yeah.
Not the big red, you know, ones that you see in parks departments, but the ones that, are really herbaceous plants.
Yeah.
And if you cut those really hard back now, they will come again, particularly the one that I grow, which is called Roseanne, which is a very common one and an extremely good flowerer. The bees absolutely love it. And it's this bright, bright blue. Have a look for it, Tony. Mm. I think you'll be surprised.
Well, anything that encourages the bees is a good thing. And I know that a lot of people are kind of frightened when it comes to pruning things. We've got a bush, or we had a bush in our garden that was really well established. It bloomed once a year with some really beautiful blooms, but it was growing too big, and we were having some work done in the garden and a patio, so it got cut seriously back, so there were just literally a few little things poking out of the ground. Mm-hmm. And I tell you what, it's like a bush again now.
Yeah,
it's
but
phenomenal.
What was it?
I couldn't tell you. I have no idea. Mrs. W would be able to tell you, but I couldn't tell you what it is. But it comes up rather nice, and she likes to drape fairy lights around it so that it lights up too,
as well as having these nice
plants. Yeah, I mean, it looks spectacular. But as I say, the thing was, it was pruned back so hard, you thought, that's not going to do anything, but it has.
Well, the thing is, of course, you see, that the harder you prune something, and it's a good thing about, say, so you're talking about roses now.
Yeah.
We'll talk about roses. The harder you prune the roses, the stronger they will come. So therefore, if you've got a very strong rose, you don't prune it as hard as you would one of the weaker ones.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. If you're pruning shrubs, always think about when they flower. And if you go, as a rule of thumb, after they've flowered, take a third of the old growth out, literally a third of the old growth out, something like a Weigelia or a Deutzia, a Forsythia earlier in the spring as well, you know, that lovely yellow flower that comes out really at the end of spring. Mm-hmm. If you take a third of that out every year, rather than taking what I call lollipop pruning, and I've got to answer a question in a little while, actually, from a friend of mine who's got lollipop laurel trees. And what they do every year, of course, you see, is just to trim it. That's the only way you can say that.
Yeah.
And the snag is with that there no air gets through the plant. And so I've got to actually say to them, you've got to get inside the plant and actually prune some of those branches out so that the air gets through, and then you don't run the risk of pests and diseases in there. Mm. You can see what's going on.
Do you know, I'm actually looking at something online as you're talking, funny enough, which mentions that sort of thing, because we were talking about tomatoes, and this was talking about the air circulation and saying that prune them back a bit, the outside, so that the plants can actually breathe.
Exactly.
Of course, I'd never really thought of it. Of course, when you actually think about it, it makes perfect sense to prune them. And I'm guessing that, as you said there, with it's not just about vegetables, is it? It's about all sorts of plants that need that air circulation to actually succeed.
It is. I mean, apples and pears, for instance.
Yeah.
Again, you know, you've got to actually give the plant some. And the rule of thumb with pruning is always anything that's dead, diseased, or dying, cut out. If it's crossing over, cut it out. And then you've got an open bush. That's what you need, so that the airflow goes through and disease in there and pests don't build up.
Mm.
I mean, it does stand to reason, but of course, it's much easier, particularly with the way that local authorities have had to actually go with contractors now. Mm. And all they do, of course, is use a hedge trimmer or, you know, anything else. And nobody seems to sort of prune properly these days.
No, anything that's quick, easy and cheap as far as that's concerned.
Absolutely.
And only twice a year as well. The other thing that I was going to mention when we were talking about certain things and vegetables in the garden at the moment, normally there are foods for this plant, that plant and every other plant, and they're all sort of slightly different pictures on the packet and that. But I've just read something here that says water sweet corn plants regularly and feed with tomato food.
Absolutely. All tomato food has got in it, is potash.
Yeah,
and potash encourages fruit, so that's what you need. Sometimes it is better to get a general purpose. And I've talked to someone this morning, funnily enough, about that. All she's been using with her pot plants indoors is tomato feed. And of course, the pot plants are not looking terribly good.
No.
For the simple reason that they're not getting all the nutrients that they need. And plants actually, like us, need micro stuff as well, you know, like magnesium, all those sort of little odds and sods that, you know, you think, oh, well, yeah, I'll just stick tomato feed on, it'll be all right. Sometimes it doesn't work. I like a good old-fashioned seaweed feed, and there are all sorts of organic stuff. And I try to grow as organically as I possibly can.
Yeah.
And I try to encourage as many birds and little mini beasts like ladybirds.
Yeah.
I try to get as much of those as I can. I have a lovely ornamental cherry outside my front door and it was absolutely covered, and I mean covered, in a mealybug. It was absolutely awful. So I put the bird feeder at the side of it, and the sparrows have been in amongst the cherry leaves, and they've actually taken all the bugs away.
They've had a snack, basically, haven't they? They've had a snack on the on the aphids that are in the plant. Yeah, that's a really good way of dealing with things. Never really thought about doing that, but you mentioned seaweed fertilizer in there. Is it actually seaweed, or is it we get with food, you know, seaweed food, which is actually, it's a kind of a form of cabbage, I do believe, or something along those lines.
You've been reading that about Chinese things, haven't you? I do. Now, I grow a plant called Cavallero de Nero, which is a black kale.
Yes.
Right. Now, if you have the leaves on that and you take the midrib out and you chop that up into little bits, spray it with olive oil or a low-calorie oil and stick it under the grill, and you've got crisps.
Oh, right.
Which are vegetable crisps. And that's what they say, that sometimes seaweed isn't seaweed properly.
Yeah.
A friend of mine has just come back from South Wales, and she's brought me some lava bread. Now, that is seaweed. Have you ever eaten any?
No, I haven't. I must try it sometime.
Oh, you can get it in tins, but it's not the same.
No,
I brought some back with me, and I've got some frozen. So every now and again, I have a little feast. I have it with tomatoes.
But why is it called seaweed, though? This is what I want to know.
It is seaweed.
It is.
Oh, it is seaweed. Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay.
And there are Japan has the seaweed, and also around the South Wales coast. It's a certain type of seaweed. It's not every, you know, it's not the big bladder rack that you can get in most places.
Yeah.
It's a specialised seaweed. It's lovely. And they boil it and process it and sort of dust it with flour, and then you buy it and fry it.
All right, we're going from gardening to cooking here, aren't we? Well, I was going to say, how do they turn this then into fertiliser?
They boil it. It's the same as you could do it, actually, if you wanted to, but it's not very sensible to take it off the beach. In fact, in most places, it's illegal to take it off the beach. But you have to wash it because, of course, of the salt in it, so that's not good. But they soak it and they boil it and they make it sterile, and then the goodness comes out of the seaweed and you pop it on your plants.
Wow. And obviously, can you use it on most plants, or is it a case of there are certain things?
No. You can use it on absolutely everything. I don't think I've not heard that anything is sort of, well, allergic to it, for want of a better expression.
Yeah. Okay. I'm guessing then it's a general sort of look after during the month of August then that we really need to be doing.
I think so. One of the things, of course, that you need to do coming to the middle to the end of August, particularly, is to slow down on feeding.
Yeah.
You don't need to do that so much. Personally, and this is what I do, I can never remember, Friday's my feeding day for such and such, and Tuesday I have to feed something else. I can't be doing with that. Yeah. I haven't got the time to do it or the inclination. So I actually feed, every time I water, I actually give it half strength feed.
Oh, right, yeah.
So that they're never short of feed. One of the things with tomatoes, of course, that you can get a blackened end to the tomatoes.
Right.
Everybody's always said that that was because of irregular watering, so that you don't, you know, you only water perhaps three times a week.
Yeah.
But they found out that it's not only that. That is one of the causes, but the other one is the fact that it's a calcium deficiency as well.
Yeah.
So you do need to get an all-round fertiliser, which has all those little bits in that you don't usually think of.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well that's really good. The other thing, very quickly before we finish, is that of course towards the back end of August, some people are already saying, well, autumn is just about here, which is allegedly starts on the 1st of September. I'm not sure, but it gets lots of people thinking about what they want to plant to see blooming next spring, bulbs and those sorts of things. Question in all of this is not really what should you be planting and all that. It's about how much rest should you give ground from finishing one season's worth of growth to another new season of other things.
Well, one of the things, of course, is a really hefty 2.5 inches to 3 inches deep of mulch. And you can buy mulch, whatever.
Yeah.
There's a very one, and this is a funny name. It's called Puckamuck. and you can buy it in big bags, in small bags. And it's really, really excellent. It really is good. With a no-dig method that you've got at the moment, everybody's into that you just slap everything on the top of the soil and let the worms do the rest. But there is a but. Don't do it unless the ground is really wet. And although we've had a lot of water, you dig down a little way and it's quite dry.
Yeah, well, there's quite a bit of heat still around, isn't there?
Absolutely. So, and that's one of the things, and I can't stress this enough, just keep an eye on your tomatoes because with the high humidity and the warmth that we're having, blight will rear its ugly head as soon as possible. I found some onto my allotment a couple of days ago.
So, oh, well, I'm going to go out once we've done this and have a look at my tomatoes, I think.
Yes, please. And if you've got potatoes as well,
now is
the time, of course, to cut the greens down.
Yeah, we've had
all
some.
All the green stuff.
We had some about a month or so ago. We had some potatoes. Really good crop this year.
Yeah, good.
But we've got a second lot in another box that almost, but not quite ready to come up.
Good. Well, as I say, keep an eye on the foliage.
Yeah.
And if you see it starting to go yellow and then black, cut it all off. It won't harm the potatoes underneath.
Right.
And you'll actually save your tomatoes.
Oh, well, we'll get that.
Have
we'll
a
get
go.
Get that bit sorted. Jean, it's been good to catch up today. Sorry, it's never long enough talking to you.
Nope.
We could talk all day, I know. But there we have to end it today. And, have a good August in sorting out stuff and bits and pieces. And we will talk to you again in a month's time. Jean Griffin for
Jolly
now.
Jolly good.
You.
And I meant to have said happy birthday for you because your birthday's a week before mine, you see, so we're both Leos.
Ah, well, happy birthday, Leo, because yours will be on Monday, won't it?
No.
No.
Just next week. Sometime.
Just next week. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
Okay, love it. Talk
All
soon.
Right. Have a good time, Jean. We'll talk soon. Okay. Bye bye.
Okay. Bye bye.